Ladies and gentlemen, please rise for the playing of our national anthem.
Baseball fans, you're listening to Fabes Babes.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Fabes Babes. I believe this is number 15.
Ooh, we're on a roll. Yeah.
It feels like way more than that, but.
It does. We've covered a lot. So we're back mid-postseason action, and we've got a lot to cover today, as usual.
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, we have made it to the postseason, so we have now covered an entire season. Like that, when you put that in perspective, like, I'm so proud.
Seriously, yeah. That is a totally different way to look at it.
Yeah. So we have a lot to cover today. As you mentioned, we're going to be talking about the wild card series, the division series, and now we're midway through, not midway through, but we have begun the CS. So let's, I'll let you kick us off.
Yeah. So we're going to do a quick recap of what has gone on in the American League Championship Series so far. We'll preview tonight's game because we're going to kind of do a little watch along. You know, we've got the games on. We're going to keep you up to date. If you are listening or just following along, maybe on your phone, we were actually talking right before we started recording about how access to the games and watching it is not always super easy with the way that streaming and everything has changed recently. So even if you don't have it on in front of you, we'll keep you updated with what's going on here in the first hour as the National League Championship Game 1 gets underway. But Jonna, we're already two games into the American League Championship Series where the two Texas teams, the Houston Astros and the Texas Rangers, are going head to head. Give us a recap. What's going down in Texas?
Yeah, so Jordan Montgomery made us very proud in game one. Former Yankee, former Cardinal. He was absolutely dominant. And in fact, they completely shut down the Astros in their own house, which, I'm getting chills like talking about it because, you know, the Yankees made the decision last year that Jordan Montgomery wasn't going to be, they didn't foresee him being part of their postseason routine, their rotation. And to me, that's just freaking mind blowing. And it's like, it's just another prime example of a cash bomb. Brian Cashman just completely bombing decisions. Not that I didn't love Harrison Bader, but anyway, we can talk more about that later. But yeah, completely shut them down. He was mixing in curveballs, four-seam fastballs, changeups, and obviously his sinker. And you know, he had six strikeouts last night, and so, and three of them to Yordan Alvarez, which like nobody can shut that guy down. So that was fun. The Rangers shut them out 2-0. Tonight's game was a lot more exciting, actually. It ended in a 5-4 like nail biter there at the end. The Rangers came out with a 4-0 lead, and the Astros were just clawing back the whole game. So, yeah, it was a nail biter, but Rangers took game two. So they are now going to be heading home on a 2-0 lead.
Yeah, now they get to head back to Globe Life, which is amazing that they, as you said that, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot. Like, they're playing in Houston, which is just that much sweeter, that much more fun to get up 2-0 and now head home. But yeah, what's wild about watching the Rangers is, you know how big their offense has been for them all season and how reliable from 1-9 that you can expect for them to be. But Jordan Montgomery, which, like, we are not surprised, are we? We're not surprised. And Nathan Eovaldi, who I know I talked about in our preview episode of the season way back when, that I was expecting a great season out of him, that they really have been the stars of each of these series for the Texas Rangers. Now, Max Scherzer is on the championship series roster for the Rangers, so perhaps he will start the next game. We'll see. But you just cannot underestimate what Eovaldi and Montgomery have given you. And I think, you know, should they make it to the next step? Should they get to go to the Fall Classic? That those will be the first two guys that they roll out there again. And yeah, every time Jordan Montgomery got a swing and miss last night, I was like, there's another dollar sign in Scott Boras's eye. So good stuff all around there. And I don't want to say, like, when the Astros lose, America wins, but I think a lot of us feel that way. So, you know, next episode we're going to do about, we are going to focus on the Astros a little bit more and speak to other podcasters of Astros fandom. So I promise we'll give them some love at some point, but obviously you and I are both pretty on board and looking forward to continuing to watch the Rangers. I mean, Corey Seager, Marcus Semien, how can you not root for those guys? Tonight we're getting started.
Did I not predict Corey Seager to have a comeback year?
You did. Yeah. And honestly, like, if it weren't for Shohei Ohtani, he would absolutely be the American League MVP. I think no questions asked. And he missed a good deal of time as well, but I think that will be closer than anticipated because of the way that Ohtani's season ended. So yeah, I've loved seeing more media coverage of him too, just as someone who doesn't watch a lot of American League games during the regular season. I'm like, why did no one tell me that Corey Seager is so endearing?
Right. Here's a doozy on Corey Seager. I was on social media the other day and I noticed his brother is getting married in, like, Greece right now. And I was like, did he clearly did not predict his brother's team to go this far.
Right. Come on, brother Seager. Like,
what?
Man, yeah, we couldn't have pushed that back a few weeks. Damn. I mean, what better way to, like,
pull the plug? Like,
yeah.
Move this along.
Because what better way to celebrate winning the World Series than going to Greece for a little getaway afterwards?
Right?
Missed opportunity there. Nice. Well, we are just minutes away from NLCS Game 1 getting underway, which I am coining the Battle of the Zacks. Because once again, if you didn't believe it before, starting pitching and defense is what wins championships. We've got Zach Gallen on the mound for the Arizona Diamondbacks. His postseason thus far, I'm glad you asked. On 10-4, he started against the Brewers, 6 innings, 5 hits, 2 earned runs, 3 walks, and 4 strikeouts. And on 10-9, he started against the Dodgers for 5 1/3, 5 hits, 2 earned runs, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts. In the regular season, Cy Young contender Zach Gallen threw 210 innings with 220 strikeouts. He had a 17-9 record and a 3.47 ERA. Zach Wheeler, who has just thrown the first pitch in this game one and allowed a base hit to Corbin Carroll, who is leading off for the Diamondbacks tonight. Zach Wheeler's having himself a postseason as well. On October 3rd, he showed against the Marlins, 6 2/3 innings, 5 hits, just 1 run, no walks and 8 strikeouts. And then again on October 9th versus the Braves, 6 1/3, 3 hits, 3 runs, two earned runs, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts, double digits in the postseason. His regular season, he threw 192 innings with 212 strikeouts. He had a 13-6 record with a 3.61 ERA. Offensively, you've got all the usual suspects in both lineups tonight. So we just saw Corbin Carroll lead off and get on first with a nice single up the middle for the Arizona Diamondbacks. And they've got their rookie catcher, Gabriel Moreno, who I've really enjoyed watching this season, and especially in the postseason, who we've seen some recent power from. So he's in that fifth spot tonight. On the other side, Kyle Schwarber, totally different kind of leadoff hitter, but you got him in that top spot for the Phillies. He is followed by fan favorites, I think, across baseball, Trey Turner and Bryce Harper. And you know that you are in deep when you don't even get to Nick Castellanos, who has 4 home runs this postseason, by the way, 2 multi-home run games. And you don't even get to him until 7th in the lineup.
Unreal.
So, yeah, we're in for a treat, I think, on both sides of the diamond tonight.
Yeah, I think so, too. I love that you called it the Battle of the Zacks. I hadn't even thought about that.
I didn't know how to spell Zach, though, because Zach Gallen spells his C-H and Zach Wheeler right. spells his C-K. So if we're getting specific here. Well, as we start to watch the game here, let's kind of do our little around the horn like we normally do, but we'll do a little postseason edition of around the horn. We'll share our postseason home run, like a highlight, a postseason strikeout, something that's maybe not been so great, and then what's on tap that we're looking forward to most about the postseason. Jonna, what has been a home run or a highlight for you so far in the postseason?
A home run for me currently is watching the Rangers beat down the Astros. I knew, like, I don't know. I'm letting my biases get in the way here, but that's been sweet for me. Yeah.
That's fair. You know, we all have emotional attachments to teams. It doesn't come from a bad place. It's just part of your fandom. Got a huge swing and miss of Marte here for the first out. So Wheeler's got his first strikeout, one-on-one out with good old Tommy Pham. Oh, Tommy Pham. He's been around. He is a character in the game for sure. We'll see if he can make something happen here in the first inning. Well, for me, I think the biggest home run has been you mentioned Jordan Montgomery and how much we've enjoyed watching him. And that's it for me. Like I really loved having him on the Cardinals. I think he was a difference maker. I think it's really a shame that they were not able to make the most of having him on their team. And I'm really bummed because he is a Scott Forrest client, and that on top of how he's performing, I just don't see the Cardinals spending the kind of money to bring him on board. I do think he could get one of the biggest free agent contracts for starting pitcher, if not the biggest. I know we've got Aaron Nola to talk about here as well with the Phillies, but what Jordan Montgomery is doing right now is bringing really everything he's already done to the forefront. So I've loved seeing him get that opportunity. I think he's been a little underrated for a while, and I'm not surprised at all to see the success that he's having. So
I agree. He's totally showcasing himself and what he's capable of. And it's just really cool to see him, you know, getting to like actually do what he knows he's capable of. Cause as we know with the Yankees, they limited what he was able to do and it didn't pay off. So it's pretty cool to see him throwing all of his pitches.
Yeah, he really is making it all work, I think, in a way that he maybe didn't get the opportunity to with his last couple teams as well. So if you would have told me this time last year that Jordan Montgomery was going to be a postseason star with his pitching coach, Mike Maddux, I would have been really excited for different reasons. But I'll take what I can get because at least they're still together making magic happen in the postseason. Well, what has been maybe more of a strikeout or something that hasn't made you the happiest or most excited to see this postseason?
I mean, obvious strikeout for me is the Yankees not making it to the postseason, but a little bit deeper than that, I think for me, not seeing the AL East succeed in the postseason, that was kind of a bummer because obviously you want your division to do well and to represent. And so, yeah, I was hoping to see a little bit more out of the Orioles this year, and obviously they're young, so don't count them out for next year. But yeah, I think that's my strikeout.
Yeah, it is really crazy, especially with how dominant the AL East is, and that a lot of times, like, even people who don't get in, teams that don't get into the playoffs end up having better records than the teams that do, like the Twins. And then to see them, like, yeah, not even represented past the division series is pretty crazy. Yeah. But here we are. I think my biggest strikeout kind of comes, I mean, I worked through it maybe a little earlier on than you did with my team, the Cardinals not making the playoffs. And that was just because it was so much more painful and that much more blatantly obvious that that was just not going to happen. It was not in the cards this year. So I was really pulling for the Marlins. If you are not familiar with the Marlins coaching staff, Skip Schumacher is a first-year manager. He is a former St. Louis Cardinal, and he is beloved as a player by the St. Louis Cardinals. He was the bench coach for the Cardinals last season, and I think he did an amazing job. Every time I saw him with the media, too, and just, like, the energy that he brought to the conversations that were shown of that he would have with his team were really special. And I think he really stepped up, and I hope he gets recognized in that National League Manager of the Year vote this year. But I was really bummed to not see the Marlins go further. I wish that the Marlins had played another team, because honestly, like, I knew the Phillies were just in for this run that they're having. I'm not surprised by it in the slightest. And I knew that they just kind of had that, like, momentum and that magic and that sweet spot in their franchise right now to be going for it. So I am bummed that we won't see more Jake Burgerbaums and Jorge Soler and Jazz Chisholm. Like, so many fun guys to watch on that team. So I was just looking forward to watching them go a little bit further. But
yeah. Yeah, me too. And I think those guys in particular were shut down in the postseason where we wouldn't have expected that. And that just totally killed their vibe. So
yeah,
that was a bummer.
Yeah. Same.
But I do expect them to be back stronger too.
Yeah. It does seem like they are set up to continue to succeed, just like you said with the Orioles. So, you know, what's to come for them is equally as exciting as what they were able to do this year. Looks like we got a ground ball out here to get that third out for Zach Wheeler. So no harm, no foul, no damage done in the first inning. And that's it. That's really the biggest story of the Marlins getting kicked out of the postseason is, just like you said, Soler, even Arias, Jake Burger, get it going against Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola. Yeah. All right. Well, now we're in the championship series. Obviously, we're watching along. What are you most looking forward to about what is left of the postseason?
I mean, I think as long as the Astros get eliminated, I am all in for any team at this point. So that, I think, for me makes it pretty fun because I'm, you know, like, I'm invested either way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to this NLCS. I think it's going to be an exciting series.
I think so too. That's mine, is that I'm just, the Diamondbacks and the Phillies are both so fun to watch. Yeah. They are similar in a lot of ways in that they're, like, scrappy and they're gonna put runs together any way, shape, or form. They've both hit a lot of home runs so far this postseason. So there's a lot of the same things to like about them. And then there's a lot of differences in the fact that the Phillies on paper are just much more dominant. They've got more players that you've heard of, more players that have been to the postseason before. But on the flip side, you've got this sneaky kind of, I'm calling it Slytherin energy, that the Diamondbacks have. So yeah, I'm excited to see them play together. And the Diamondbacks have not lost yet in the postseason. The Phillies have only lost one game. So I think we're in for a good show. And best of seven. Hopefully there'll be a little bit more back and forth since we haven't had a ton of that yet. Yeah. And that's what we're going to talk about now, is we're just going to kind of go through the postseason headlines, give you a recap, catch you up on here on some of the biggest storylines. So Jonna, tell us about the wild card sweeps. We had all wild card series sweeps.
Man, the wild card series was such a letdown for me, because like, best of three, you're hoping for three games on a lot of those. Shockingly, that's not how it went. So, on the AL side, the Twins took the Blue Jays in two. After 21 years, the Twins finally won a playoff series. That was wild. I thought, I did not expect that to go that way. But again, the Twins did lead the MLB in strikeouts and finished fourth in Fangraphs WAR rating. And so, yeah, big games from Carlos Correa, rookie third baseman Royce Lewis. And I think that just gave them just enough run support to ultimately shut down Toronto. And their offense was just kind of like it was last year. They just didn't show up in the postseason this year.
Yeah. And speaking of showing up and run support, Kyle Schwarber has hit a leadoff home run against Zach Gallen to make it 1-0 Phillies. That's why I was saying he's a different kind of leadoff hitter, because that's what he can do.
And that early run support is huge.
Absolutely.
Getting the early jump.
For sure. So, yeah, it was really, I think the most surprising thing to me about the Twins and Blue Jays series was that the Twins offense just could not show up at all. And it what's weird about it, a lot of these series, is that they haven't even seemed, like, even if the scores are relatively close, the momentum has not been close. I just feel like you've had a clear feeling of, like, this team's got it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is a good way to sum up how the wild card series went. So the Rangers over the Rays in two was also wild, being that the Rays started off with a historically successful start to the season. You know, but as we mentioned, the Rangers pitching has been so dominant with Monty and Eovaldi. They combined to allow just one run over 13.2 innings. It was, I mean, yeah, they were just unstoppable.
I hate to interrupt you, but Bryce Harper has just left the park with a moonshot, a second solo home run in as many batters against Zach Gallen here. It's 2-0 Phillies. Woo.
Okay, Phils. So they're not letting up on their offense, as it turns out.
Wow.
I saw a picture of Bryce Harper today. He's like super hairy underneath all that.
Yes.
Maybe you could guess that with the beard, but I did not guess that. You
didn't see it coming?
No.
I think it's interesting because usually, I think what I thought when I saw it was like, because I saw him, you know, with his shirt off, it like celebrating the champagne celebration. I feel like those were like circulating everywhere. They were like, look at these hot Bryce Harper showered in champagne pictures. And it's weird because I think, like, especially our generation, we grew up seeing like the Baywatch pictures of like that being like the hot guy with like absolutely no hair, like suntan oil on him. But I don't know. I guess I kind of liked seeing that because I'm like, that's a man. That's a man, Bryce Harper. Okay. Oh man, he is fired.
And he's 31 years old as of, was his birthday today or yesterday?
Oh yeah, it is somewhere around here.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I mean, he's still, all things considered, very young, but he is in the zone. Okay, tell us about the Diamondbacks and the Brewers, because that was very unexpected in the wild card series. I think that might have been the biggest upset.
Yeah, so it was crazy, too, because Arizona's pitching was actually a little bit rough, but their offense was just insane. So it was enough to take Corbin Burnes down.
Yeah.
And yeah, they had excellent fielding too. They had a few crazy plays from Evan Longoria. So yeah, I mean, I think just with their offense, that was enough, but it was wild because their pitching was a little bit rocky in that, series, but they did manage to fend off the Brewers in two. Phillies over Marlins in two. Wheeler,
that was probably the least exciting because it was just the Phillies and Marlins. It was probably the least exciting wild card series because it just didn't, I was so sad, but it just didn't seem like the Marlins had a chance.
Yeah. No, it, yeah. I mean, that's, they're on a tear. And there's just not much. I mean, you mentioned earlier, And obviously the Marlins, they just couldn't get their bats going either. They couldn't get Soler or Chisholm. Soler and Chisholm went 0-for-8 with 4 strikeouts. And they hit 194 over that over the two games. So
yeah, and I mean that's an offense
on the cards.
Right. That's an offense that has been hot and was really clicking. So to me, that speaks to how dominant the Phillies pitching was, more than like when I was watching those games, I didn't feel like, what are they swinging out? What are they doing? It was like, whoa, no, they are just completely overmatched here in terms of, especially with all the injuries that they've had for their starting pitching and stuff. It's just, it wasn't there at the right time.
Yeah. So now, I really feel like the Phillies have all the puzzle pieces there with the pitching, and that's huge.
Yeah. I mean, they've got a 1-2 punch that is as reliable as any. They've got superstars up and down their lineup, but on top of that, just like some scrappy guys here and there that are going to plug and play and kind of get you when you're not expecting it. So I agree. They have all of the makings of the Magic, and it seems like they genuinely enjoy playing together, and like the vibes are really high too in terms of them just having a good team atmosphere. And that's what makes
it work. Their fan base too is like, they're just so electric.
Okay, yes.
So one thing I didn't mention about the Rays is that they couldn't even scrounge up 20,000 fans to come to their wild card series. So, I mean, that's terrible.
Yeah.
They were like day games, but.
Yeah, I mean, you can make all the excuses in the world for it, but I think it really speaks volumes that the largest crowd at the postseason game for the Rays was still smaller than the crowd for the last game of the season at the Kansas City Royals game. The Kansas City Royals lost 104 games this year, and they still had a bigger crowd on their closing day of their season than the Rays have at their postseason games. So they need to figure something out.
I was one
there.
Of those.
Were you?
Fans at the Royals-Yankees game, yeah.
There you go. Yeah. And it's not like they were playing a contender either. So people are showing out because the fan bases are that dedicated. And I've heard a number of things with the Rays and their lack of attendance, but it seems like one of the biggest things is where the stadium is actually located is just very inconvenient. It's not attractive in terms of like being accessible to people. And that's huge. And it's weird because they announced recently that they're going to build a new stadium in that same area. So we'll see if that holds up, if that actually happens. But with all of this being talked about, it really could maybe change the trajectory of things for them. We will see.
It shocks me, though, because they have one of the lowest payrolls. So I don't know why they would be focusing their efforts there instead of on the makeup of the team.
Right. Well, I think the Cardinals are actually a pretty good, just because I know more about them, obviously, like they're a good example of, obviously they've always been kind of middle of the road in payroll, but they definitely make a bigger investment in the fan experience. And I, as a fan who really appreciates that, I'm like more willing, I guess, to forgive that they don't sign a million superstar players and they are not signing these multi-million after multi-million dollar contracts, because I do feel like the investment in the experience overall is there, and that they are like thinking about it from both sides of not just spending as much money as possible to put some product out on the field that, let's face it, may or may not show up. Like, we've got Jacob deGrom and Max Scherzer who are making the most money probably on both these rosters and not playing in their, or in all of these rosters of the teams that are still there and not playing this postseason. And, you know, I appreciate, I guess, that they don't focus all their money on spending it, you know, just on getting the players who are going to get paid the most right now. And that there is that focus on the experience and the investment in the stadium and the surrounding area of the stadium, especially because, like, I don't know if anybody is super familiar with St. Louis or you've been there a lot, but there's not like a lot of other stuff right there around the stadium that's like worth showing up for and even feeling super safe, like just hanging out with your family down there. So it is really important, and it makes a huge difference that there is that surrounding area that they've built up and invested in. And that's absolutely why people come out the way that they do. So we will see if the Rays take things like that into consideration. But on the other side, like you said, is there a bigger home field advantage than the Philadelphia Phillies? Like, holy, they're there again tonight, and we don't have the sound on, obviously, but I know I can hear it, you know, in my ears by now. And I think it absolutely makes a difference for them.
Yeah, they're falling. And as we're kind of ending on the Rays with the new stadium, maybe that is one of the pieces that they've been missing in these big games, is that they don't have like the fan support and like kind of that like rally behind them, which does make a huge difference in these postseason games. You know, the Yankees have had one of the best followings, the Astros, the Phillies, Cardinals.
Yeah, it's very rare that the teams that get to the postseason are not the ones that have really behind them.
Yeah.
Well, we are obviously all the way through the division series now as well. We've talked about how the Orioles were probably the upset of the division series, the American League division series, the Rangers over the Orioles. This was the first time that the Orioles had been swept. They lost in three games in that best of five series. First time they had been swept since May of 2022. And same story as the Rangers and the Rays. There was just essentially no offense. Jordan Montgomery, Nathan Eovaldi shut it down, and they held on to that same tune for a third game. And those stars like Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson, you saw a little bit from them what little fight they could get into. But more than anything, it speaks volumes to the level of work that we're seeing from the Rangers starting pitching right now. So yeah. Orioles out of it, I think, sooner than a lot of people anticipated. They were, they won 100 games this year, and they were better than I think a lot of people expected them to be. So definitely keep an eye out to see them again in being very competitive in 2024. The Astros over the Twins, it was a pretty good series. It was a fun back and forth series to watch. I think it was the closest of games, at least in the way that it felt, and probably in the score as well. Carlos Correa had himself a postseason. I mean, he showed up and showed out, and that is what we are used to seeing him do in the postseason. Pablo Lopez had a couple incredible starts for the Twins, but it was not enough to hold off the Astros lineup, which has a couple of probably the best hitters in all of baseball right now. So we talked about Jordan Alvarez earlier, and you get to the bottom of that lineup and you're not even to Jeremy Pena, who's last year's MVP yet. So again, no wonder that they were able to make some noise and get back into the championship series for the seventh time in a row, which is pretty.
And listen, Alex Bregman, I can't stand the guy, but he is a freaking bulldog in the postseason. Like, he just, not that he isn't throughout the season, but man, he has some scrappy stuff that happens in the postseason and some big moments. So,
yeah, we talk about it every year, but there are those guys that just something really turns on for them and they thrive in the postseason environment more than even in the regular season. So we definitely saw that from him, and I'm sure we'll continue to. So hopefully that'll keep the ALCS, the championship series, now interesting. But we've got Phillies over the Braves, which I think was the series that everyone was probably most invested in across baseball, because obviously that was a rematch of last year's division series where the Phillies very much upset the Braves, and same damn thing happened again. The Braves, best team in all of baseball. They were the first to clinch playoff berth. We were ready to just settle in and watch them cruise their way to the World Series. And again, Nola and Wheeler, Bryce Harper, Nick Castellanos had to make sure that that wasn't going to happen. So that was a really fun series to watch. Maybe not as exciting as I initially thought it would be.
Although that probably is the one that got me like fired up the most about watching the postseason.
Definitely.
Obviously there's like the initial lull of my team didn't make it. Like what do I have to watch for kind of? And then I think that's when things kind of started heating up.
Absolutely. Yes. If you're watching here with us on TBS, you see that the Kelce brothers are at this Phillies Diamondbacks game tonight in Philly. That's interesting. Do you know anything about them? Because are they from Philadelphia?
I don't know.
Yeah. No Taylor Swift sighting, though, just to be clear. Taylor Swift is not.
She's not a baseball gal.
She's not there. Wow. Just lost some points with me, T-Swift.
While we're on this topic, I'm going to put a pin in this just to say my dog and my sister's dog, well, my two dogs, my sister's dog are dressing up as T-Swift exes for Halloween. So we got a Kelce jersey going on. We got John Mayer making an appearance and Harry Styles. So Amazing. Stay tuned for pictures.
That is so fun. We might have to, maybe we can play like a fun Halloween game with Susie when we have her on soon. I feel like I like keep forgetting Halloween is so soon, but we can have some fun with that.
Yeah, for sure.
And then of course we are here watching the Diamondbacks because the Diamondbacks did overtake the Dodgers without a problem. This is probably the most surprising, but the most undoubtable way this was going to go after that game one, I was like, I don't think we're going to see the Dodgers win a game in the postseason. If you were watching or if you followed at all, you saw Clayton Kershaw, who is undoubtedly a first ballot Hall of Famer, had the worst inning or the worst outing of his career. He was in for just a third of an inning, 35 pitches, 6 earned runs, and he was taken out after recording only one out in the first inning because those Diamondbacks were just all over him. So they had to.
You would think that the Dodgers, like, I'm not real sure what Dave Roberts, why he still put so much trust in him in the postseason, because this is like a pattern for him.
Yeah, it's
true. You're right. Like, this was the worst.
Yeah, and he really hasn't been healthy this season. Like I think he didn't pitch for all of June, uh-oh, maybe some of July.
Castellanos home run. You gotta be kidding me with this guy.
Wow. 5
home runs, 6 ribbies.
Yeah, we talked about it already, but Nick Castellanos has just hit his 5th home run of the postseason. It is now 3-0 Phillies. Man, that dugout is fired up.
They are lit.
They're so fun.
I mean, look at that crowd too.
Yeah.
Just the whole city of brotherly love is on fire. But I gotta say, I love Zach Gallen's vibes. Like,
I do too.
He looks like a cool dude.
Yeah, and I think he's another one that doesn't get maybe as much love because he plays for this team that just normally isn't on this kind of a stage. So
yeah,
I'm glad that he's getting his moment. I don't love that he's kind of getting beat up by the long ball here tonight.
Yeah.
But yeah, go ahead.
Is that 3 home runs now?
3 home runs, 3 solo home runs. Yep. 3-0 Phillies. And we're only in the second inning. But yeah, I think Gallen and Merrill Kelly is the other pitcher for the Diamondbacks who, again, I definitely mentioned at the beginning of the season that I was looking forward to watching him. They were just able to really hold it down in a way that the Dodgers starting pitchers did not in all 3 games. It was actually kind of like the worst was game 1 for the Dodgers. It was a little bit better in game 2, but still not nearly good enough to hang on. And it was like a little bit better. You thought maybe Lance Lynn was going to pull it through and give you at least 5 full innings, but no such luck. And the Dodgers are done. The Dodgers are at home watching this with us.
Yeah.
So one of the big topics that has been talked about that I'm interested to hear your take on is the time off that the division winners get. So the Dodgers and the Braves and the Orioles and the two, no, not the Twins, the Orioles and the Astros got a week off between, like, six full days off between the end of the season and then when they played their first postseason game. And a lot of the media and even some of the players have insinuated that that is a disadvantage for the winningest teams. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I don't know. I've seen both sides of it. Like, if you look at last year, it didn't seem to affect the teams who had a break. Right. The Yankees, the Astros.
Yeah, and last year would have been the first time that it was like this. Right. With this playoff format.
And it didn't seem to affect it as much, but this year it's, like, blatantly obvious that it I don't know.
I mean, I don't know.
It's a coincidence or it's, you know. I mean, they're machined to play every single day. So.
Right. Yeah. I certainly think that there is some value in the fact in the routine, right? Especially for anyone who operates at the highest level. That's something that you'll read in, like, every self-help book. And I'm sure in athletics, the consistency of the routine is huge and hugely helpful in their performance. It's, you know, it's what they're used to. And they definitely are not sticking with that grind when they have 6 days off. But it's after a 162 game season. And especially depending on where the team is at, like the Orioles, for example, I just thought they definitely needed the rest, right? Like, they were able to kind of rework their pitching a little bit and set that up in a way that they would not have been able to have a competitive advantage with instead. So there's all of that too. And I certainly think exactly what you said, just way too small of a sample size to say for sure that, you know, this is what's making the difference for them. And the other thing that I guess I'll put out there is I do not think that it will change. Not anytime soon, because I think that there will need to be a much larger sample size before Major League Baseball and the owners and the players will all come back together and say, like, hey, I don't think this is working. And if anything, I could see there being maybe one less day off for the wild card team who wins and then them having to travel and then play the next day. And that gives the division winner, the teams with the buys, a little bit more of a leg up. I don't know. We're not going to see it change anytime soon, but I do think it's interesting. I think the main reason we probably won't see it change ever is because the teams make more money this way with the extended playoffs. Obviously, the fans can be more invested in more teams because of the expanded playoffs. And it is one of those things where there is not anything tangible to tie it to prove. There are not numbers that you can put in front of the owners and say, your team has a better chance of winning if they don't have these days off. So
yeah,
that's why I don't think it will ultimately change. But it is interesting to hear all the discussion around it. And I'd be more interested to hear how players feel about it, especially once it's all said and done. Have you heard any interviews or takes from players on it?
No, I really haven't. But yeah, I don't know. I just think it's too small of a sample size right now. And obviously, I think players who had the time off or probably who, you know, it didn't work to their advantage are probably going to say so. But like, does that actually mean that it's disadvantageous or
right?
Were you just not on your game? I don't know. But yeah, I'm going to be interested to see what some of these guys say in the off season about it. I'm going to be honest though. I kind of missed the one game wild card. I think it was always so much more exciting.
Yeah, it was.
And maybe that's just because this year was like sweeps across the board and it wasn't exciting, but I think it just made it more intense.
It definitely did. Yeah. But it also, as a fan of a team who the last one game wild card that there was a 1-0 Dodgers win over the Cardinals, who got eliminated in that one game wild card playoff. It hurts that much more because you're in the playoffs for a day.
Yeah, I know.
You get a few days, 2 days.
I don't know. Like, For me, I never, because the Yankees, have they played in that game a lot to make it in. And it's like we would always end up with the Twins on that wild card game. But I don't think I ever considered us in the postseason until that game was over. If yeah. that makes sense.
Yeah. Like, I think that's fair.
Yeah. So our friends over at Pinstripe Chronicles say, it's a disadvantage to the teams that fall short. The flip side is the teams that don't have the days off go into the next round having more tired arms. And that's true because they're having to start that series with their three spot.
Right. Yeah, I think, but it all depends too on, you know, when you have these three instead of five game series, like the Rangers had, like they're able to align things from the top again because they had a couple extra days off. So I just think there's way too many factors and variables of the way it could fall, depending on like how many games they actually end up playing and all of that, to say there's a fix for it. There really isn't, you know?
Yeah.
But it is interesting. All right, let's go kind of into our Ruth's Rundown segment now as we're into the third inning of this game. It's still 3-0 Phillies, and Wheeler's got his first out here in the top of the third. But, Jonna, tell us about some of the manager moves, because we know that starts to happen even sometimes before the end of the season, and we've certainly seen – we're calling this segment managers, coaches, and execs. Oh, my, because – there's plenty of all of that in the news.
There's a lot.
Yeah, we're going to start with the managers.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of moves, and it's making it really fun to speculate, like, where will these guys end up? Guys and gals. So we'll start at the top with Terry Francona, longtime manager of the Guardians. He waffled on this a lot this season, and he ultimately decided it was a good time for him to finish, as he currently has the most wins by any Cleveland manager with 921 wins. He's also won Manager of the Year awards several times, three times, 2013, 2016, and 2023. So certainly something to hang his hat on. And I honestly, though, I was a little surprised, to see that, but I think he also has been out with health issues a few times the past couple of seasons. So, Pinstripe Chronicle, thank you. They like our title segment. I can't take credit. That's Kelsey. That's all Kelsey.
That's my musical theater degree at work, folks. Thank you.
Phil Nevin has been fired by the Angels after he replaced Joe Maddon mid-season last year. Buck Showalter of the Mets has been fired. And for the fifth time in 6 years, the Mets are in the market for a new manager. I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot of change and leadership for them. So, and not just in their manager position, as you have noted down further down, they have a new president of baseball operations who came from the Brewers. So my thinking there, or I don't know, but I think a lot of people are wondering now if Craig Counsell will follow him over to the Mets. It would be interesting if he did, though, because Milwaukee is his hometown.
Right.
When I first heard that,
I was like, absolutely not. What are you talking about? I don't care what David Stearns and Craig Counsell's relationship is. Like, Craig Counsell is a Brewer for life, and they're absolutely going to, I'm sure that they will want to hold on to him. It will just be a matter of if Steve Cohen's checkbook wins again. But yeah, the behind the curtain part of the Buck Showalter news is that he came out and said, I will not be returning for 2024. He kind of made it seem like it was a mutual decision, or maybe even his decision. And then mere moments later, the Mets were like, yeah, we decided not to bring Buck back for 2024. He's great, but we're going to let David Stearns bring in his own people. And that's where everybody's like, his own people, Craig Counsell. Yeah. So yeah, we'll see.
Cue the rumors. So yeah, this will be interesting to see how this all plays out and if all this plays together. Gabe the Babe of the Giants has been let go. But more excitingly on that front, they announced that they did not announce. Reporters announced that Alyssa Nacken officially interviewed for the Giants manager role just 18 months after she became the first woman to coach on the field during an MLB game. So, yeah, that's obviously exciting, but I also can't wait for this to, like, as day two of the news is settling in for me, I'm like, I can't wait for this to not be like big news, you know, that a female has interviewed for the position. And just reading all of the comments really got me fired up and upset about it today. And
I'm like, okay, I've been thinking a lot about this, and I guess this is what I'll say about that, because not that I feel like I should have to put this in perspective for people, but like, let me give you some perspective. I am a singer and an actor, and I have performed at a pretty high professional level as a singer and an actor. I have absolutely zero experience in teaching anyone else how to sing or act. So there are so many people who have years of experience teaching singing, teaching acting, who may not have performed at the level that I have, but they are far more equipped to teach and to coach singing and acting than I am. And that, ladies and gents and everyone else, is exactly why Alyssa Nacken doesn't have to be a Major League Baseball player to be an amazing coach and asset for that team. So hopefully that kind of puts it in a way that you can wrap your head around, maybe a little bit more outside of the baseball world. But to me, I'm like, I don't even understand why we're having this discussion. And I couldn't agree with you more that I'm like, just, I'm ready for it to not be headline news anymore. And I'm sure she feels that way more than anyone.
Yeah, no, perfectly said. And I read a headline earlier, and I don't remember the number, but like there have been several managers and coaches in the MLB who never played a single game of baseball. So, of professional baseball. So, yeah, to your point, like, who freaking cares? And also, like, look at how many former players have tried to then go into coaching roles, and they've completely like flopped. So, absolutely. Like, same goes on the other side. That doesn't necessarily mean that they know how to coach effectively.
Yeah. Case either. In point, it is a completely different thing to be able to teach someone else to do something at a high level than it is to be able to do it at that level yourself. It is a different skill set. And there are certainly people who are very good at doing it that are also very good at teaching it. But just because you are good at doing it does not mean you're good at teaching it or coaching it. So, and vice versa. Yeah. And in fact, a lot of the times the players who don't necessarily have as much success, and not saying that Alyssa Nacken has not had her own level of success, because she is a former professional player, but obviously, like, she hasn't played at the major league level because she's a woman. And that a lot of times it is the coaches or the players that become the best coaches are not the ones who played at the major league level, but they are the ones that spent the time breaking it down and deciphering and trying to help maybe themselves, but then ultimately others to get to that point. So yeah,
absolutely.
Makes all the sense in the world to me.
Yep. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. Obviously a lot of Yankee fans have called for Aaron Boone's job, but in my opinion, nothing's going to happen there. He actually, his contract runs through 2024 with a club option for 2025. So I don't know. Reporters don't seem to think he is going anywhere either.
Sounds like
so
it.
So I'm not sure if there's anything to report out on that. Dusty Baker will also be a free agent, as he was signed just on a year deal. But I mean, I think unless he's the one that decides to call it quits, I also don't see them not bringing him back, especially after they've made it this far.
It's Dusty Baker. Come on.
Yeah. I don't see them being the ones parting ways with him. So unless he decides to retire, but I also think if you make it this close, this far, and you don't, and they don't make it all the way, like that, just he's gonna wanna give it another shot. So,
yeah. Either way, I could see him coming back around, but we'll see. He's getting up there. He's been around for a really long time, but he's such a fixture of baseball. Yeah. It's
well, he's still so sharp too. Like he.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I think he's 73. So,
oh yeah, he'll know when the time is right. And I agree. He's more than earned. He is the thing to like about the Astros, right?
Right. Yeah. I know there was this tweet going around. And I was like, "How is Dusty Baker this cool?" And it was a really, really cool shot of him with like aviators and like a bomber jacket on. It was just a really neat picture. But yeah, it's like, after the whole Astros fiasco, bringing him in was probably one of the best things they could do to like patch up their image, so to speak.
Yeah, I agree. He's definitely one of those like Bruce Bochy, Terry Francona type of managers that is just somehow rarely beloved amongst players and fans and executives and the media. So we will enjoy
Bruce Bochy though. Like his voice, what movie star does he? I can't think of.
Oh, he does. Yeah, I know what you mean. He does have that like Hollywood voice. Yeah. Maybe he could do some voiceover work in his retirement. Well, you mentioned that there are some, obviously there's executive moves as well that are oftentimes very connected to the managerial moves. But a few weeks ago now, I guess maybe even closer to a month, Chaim Bloom was fired as the chief baseball officer for the Red Sox. Interviews have not yet been announced for who is anticipated to replace him. So get those resumes, get those applications in, and we will wait to see on that one. Jeff Greenberg is hired as the new GM for the Detroit Tigers. That was announced on September 26th. So they are looking to make some moves and get on a new track there. So that's exciting to see for them. And then, as you mentioned, the Mets hired their first ever president of baseball operations, who is the former president of baseball operations for the Milwaukee Brewers. David Stearns he's pretty young for an executive. I think he's like 38 and he already has years of experience with the Milwaukee Brewers. He is from New York. He grew up a Mets fan. So there's just all that good, like him and Steve Cohen being the biggest 1 and 2 Mets fans, going to spend all the money and make all the magic happen in New York. So we'll see. But in tandem with that, their GM, Billy Epler, days after it was announced that David Stearns was taking over, Buck Showalter wasn't coming back. And then Billy Epler was like, I'm actually going to show myself out too. And it was reported that he resigned. He said he resigned and he was stepping down to give David Stearns the opportunity to kind of start from scratch and bring his own people in, which makes perfect sense. I don't know. I would love to be a fly on the wall in the offices of how that all went down, because while I'm sure that that is the reason that he stepped down, you know, did he really step down? How mutual of a decision was it? And what was just really weird about that situation from the outside looking in right off the bat was that Billy Epler had already been there, like doing his thing, and they were bringing in David Stearns over him, which, you know, had just not been the situation before. So yeah, I'm sure
they seem like they're cleaning house for sure now on that side of it.
And you know what? I mean, good for them. Something needs to change over there. So
yeah,
we'll see. The other big headline in the news just today was that Kim Ng has declined her option to return to the Marlins as general manager after her first 3 years as a general manager in the major leagues. And I was surprised by that one because it seems like Kim Ng and the Marlins are a good fit. She has undoubtedly made a great impact. And, you know, whatever the behind the scenes story really is there, I'm sure we'll hear more in the days to come. But the one thing that I am sure of is that Kim Ng still has a very bright and exciting future in Major League Baseball. And I'm looking forward to continuing to see what she's up to next.
You know, I think Derek Jeter was pretty instrumental in bringing her on board.
Yes, definitely.
And so I wonder if there, you know, like you said, there had to have been some behind the scenes stuff. Maybe perhaps where they just couldn't come to some agreements on things, just like Jeter when he left. But yeah, time will tell. And I'm excited for her because I think she could go anywhere at this point.
I would think so. Yeah. And I mean, she has connections with, she's worked for the White Sox and the Dodgers already. And there are so many teams who could really use her insight. The Cardinals have their president of baseball operations on through the 2025 season, but you know, I'm already telling the DeWitts. Do you hear me, Bill DeWitt? I can give you Kim Ang's number. I don't have it, but
you have connections. Sure. Yeah.
We'll figure it out if we can make the magic happen. It is now 4-0 Philly.
Fanatic is going, is getting the crowd like.
Yeah. Listen, this is why I'll never be mad to see the Phillies do well.
Sorry.
Because the Philly Fanatic is the most elite mascot in all sports. Can we just all agree on that?
Absolutely.
We can.
I love him.
Oh, I'm just catching up on our comments here. We've got some good back and forth here going. Yes, about Dusty Baker. Sounds like our sentiments are being echoed that, yeah, he has absolutely earned the right to stick around as long as he wants to. And I don't think anybody in baseball is going to be particularly mad about that.
The bullpen is warming up for the Diamondbacks now, which I, you know, wouldn't have expected Gallen to go out after three, but.
Yeah, you hate to see it. His pitch count isn't particularly high. He's at 51 through 3 1/3. But I don't know if it's...
Wes McKinney. Big disagree on the Fanatic.
Wow. Well,
controversial.
I would love to know what you think the best mascot in all of sports is. And it better not be a bird, because we all know that birds are not the best. As a bird, I am not a bird fan.
So who is your choice for like best mascot then?
My guess is Wesley McKinney thinks it's Fred Bird, but it's not. And the last time that I was at Busch Stadium, Fred Bird ignored me. So I particularly have no allegiance to Fred Bird at all anymore.
Fred Bird freaks me out a little bit.
Yeah, he's scary. I don't know who Gritty is. Wes McKinney is saying that Gritty is the best mascot in all sports. Do you know who that is?
No.
I have no idea. No idea. I'd have to Google. Gritty the mascot. No, I've never really had anybody argue with me on that, about my take on the Philly Fanatic. Oh, the Philadelphia Flyers. Mascot is Gritty.
Oh, he's cute.
Yeah, he's fun. Okay.
But we agree that Philly, though, has the best mascots.
Yeah, I guess we're really on the same page there. Thank you, Pinstripe Chronicles. Fanatic all the way.
He really is cute. Okay, so while we're on the topic of mascots, there's a mascot Hall of Fame museum, and it's like in... can't remember where it is.
Oh, that's so funny.
And I just stumbled on it. It's like a children's museum, but they also have like mascots there to like engage with the... I can't remember where it is. It's somewhere random, like Indiana or something.
Yeah. Hmm.
And I did a post on this.
The bases are loaded here for Zach Gallen. He's still only got one out in the bottom of the third. 4-0 Phillies, and you got JT Realmuto at the plate. Probably one of the best hitting pitchers.
Double play.
Oh, he's going to get out of it.
That was a good play. That was a beautiful
play. Yeah. Incredible stretch there out at first base to get the double play, and Zach Gallen is out of it. Man, yeah, I wonder if he's just... Hit us up in the comments if you are listening to the broadcast, because I'm sure they're sharing some insight, and obviously I haven't been watching super closely, but... Gallen's pitch count is not out of control by any means. And it doesn't look like he is totally missing his spots. So maybe I don't know if they're seeing him particularly well, or Or what if just maybe one of his pitches really isn't working for him? But yikes.
Okay, Pinstripe Chronicles says, fun fact, the Philly Fanatic has a life-size display at the Hall of Fame. So I assume you're talking about the National Baseball Hall of Fame. But the Mascot Hall of Fame is in Whiting, Indiana.
It is in the middle of nowhere.
Might be road trippable, though.
It might not be that far for me, yeah. All right, Wes McKinney, we're going to go to the Mascot Hall of Fame together, and we're going to expose ourselves to all new mascots and take it from there. Wow.
There you go.
Mascot Hall of Fame. Oh, yeah, no, it's... It is 24 miles from me, so it is not far at all.
There you go.
Less than an hour drive.
This winter, I expect an episode on the Mascot Hall of Fame.
Yeah, we'll have to do some live on assignment reporting from the Mascot Hall of Fame. I love it. Well, we have covered a lot, and I guess the Phillies have given us a clear lead here in the first hour of game one of the NLCS, but it was fun to catch up. And the good news is that we're going to be back on Thursday night. We're going to do another stream just like this. If there are specific things that you want to talk about or get takes on, we would love to hear from you. So hit us up, whether it's in the chat or you can message either of us on Twitter, or we're at babespodcast@gmail.com. Is that our email, Jonna?
Yeah.
So that's always easy too. You can shoot us an email. But yeah, we're going to be back, do another live stream. We'll give the Astros a little more love and get some insight from podcasters who follow them a little bit more closely on Thursday night. And then also on Thursday night, we are going to be guests on the Bronx Muchachos podcast. That's going to be live at 8 p.m. Central on Thursday night. So go follow @BronxMuchachos1 on Twitter. We'll throw it in the show notes, and that's how you can keep up with that. And obviously we'll repost it and make sure you can find us there on Thursday night too. So give us a follow @BabesBabesPod on Twitter and @BabesBabesPodcast on Instagram. And wherever you get your podcasts, you have probably found our YouTube channel here, but we are there as well. Do us a favor, give us a quick review, maybe a 5-star rating, and most importantly, tell your friends and join us next time. So happy postseason. Wheeler's going to jump back in here. We're in the top of the fourth, and we will see you on Thursday.